Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
When they used to ask the late George Burns about his vaudeville career, George would say, "Oh, they loved me in Altoona." Well, our guest this morning is someone they love in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He's Joe Liga. He is a former producer assistant producer, I think it was, for Channel 40 in Wall, PA. He is a graduate of Westminster College. He's a native of Mercer County. But most importantly for our discussion, he is the executive producer and the creator of the new documentary series, The Last Independent Automaker, which had its Pittsburgh debut just a couple of weeks ago and is continuing to run on Saturday afternoons on Channel 13 in Pittsburgh. It's about the history of American Motors. If you're interested in cars, if you're interested in mid-century history, if you're interested in business history, it is, no pun intended, a heck of a ride. Joe Liga is our guest this morning. Good morning, Joe.
Wow, thank you for the introduction, Jay. I feel pretty special after that.
Well, but, I should disclose that I was one of the many backers that you had, I think a GoFundMe or a WeFund, whatever it's called, a crowdfunding thing. So just in case people are thinking, oh, well, he sounds like he's really raving about this or something.
Forgotten. Thank you again for donating to our project. That's a large part of what made it possible was we had, you know, a lot of people who believed in us early on that contributed to this documentary. And it's really, really been cool to finally be able to share it with them. So we're lucky. And then the series is also available online right now on our YouTube channel. The channel's called Auto Moments, and all six episodes are available there. And we've been blown away by the response from people. It's been so exciting to see how much people love the series. They love the stories. They say, oh, I grew up driving a Rambler. My parents had a Matador, or, you know, I came home from the hospital in the back seat of a Pacer. You know, there's so many connections for people that these cars that haven't been around for years.
Yeah.
There's so many connections, the memories and stuff.
What is your website if people want to go directly to your website?
Sure. So if they want to learn more about the series, they can just go to lastindependentauto.com. And we have a Facebook page as well called, that's just Facebook/Last Independent Auto, or look up The Last Independent Automaker. Lots of cool behind the scenes photos there, you know, stories and, you know, that kind of thing we've been sharing now that the series is out. But one fact a friend told me, which I did not know this, a friend in the AMC club told me that Pennsylvania was like the second biggest market for AMC cars after Wisconsin, which I guess, you know, Wisconsin's where they made them. Mm-hmm. So, of course, everybody wanted to, you know, buy local. But there's something about Pennsylvania, the combination of the size of the state and I guess the psyche of the people. AMC sold a lot of cars in Pennsylvania over the years. It was like constantly number two on their you know, states for in terms of sales.
You have a whole episode, I think I can't remember if it's episode 5 or 6, that is about the AMC Eagle, which was the first American-made four-wheel drive passenger car as opposed to a truck. It kind of, in many ways, as you point out in the documentary, anticipated the crossover or SUV craze. And I wonder if that's what was one of the reasons that the cars were so popular in Pennsylvania, because we have a lot of hilly terrain and we have a lot of snow in the winter times.
Certainly in the 80s, I think, you know, AMC also owned Jeep.
Also owned Jeep.
The Jeep division. Mm-hmm. And so I think, in the 80s, I think AMC sold a lot of Eagles and a lot of Jeeps in Pennsylvania, because you're right. We have a lot of hills and a lot of snow. And they're a great car too. I guess, you know, Subarus kind of picked up that mantle in the modern day, but they were a great car for that kind of market. But I mean, even going back into the 60s and the 70s, I think there was just something about American Motors cars that resonated with Pennsylvania types. You know, I don't want to get too psychological, but I grew up, my family is part Scotch-Irish. There's a lot of Germans. There's a lot of people who were, you know, thrifty with a dollar. And I think AMC's kind of mindset of economy cars, doing more with less, you know, saving money on gas, I think that appealed to a lot of people in my parents' generation and their parents, who, you know, I think Pennsylvanians are practical thrifty type people. And I think cars like that appeal to them as well.
We're talking with Joe Ligo. He's the executive producer and creator of The Last Independent Automaker. He's a native of Mercer County, attended Westminster College. You have relatives in White Oak, PA, I believe.
Yes. So my mom's originally from the White Oak, kind of a Keysport area. As you mentioned in the introduction, I worked at Channel 40, Cornerstone Television in Wall. And I have friends at WQED. And yeah, it's Pittsburgh's a great area, even though I no longer live there. It's near and dear to my heart. When I get homesick, I watch Rick Seeback.
If you're listening to this right now and you're thinking, I don't want to listen to these two guys talk about cars the whole time, stay tuned, because I want to ask Joe a little bit about the climate in public television right now, since he's worked around it, including, I believe you interned at Motor Week. And
yes.
The host of Motor Week is one of the experts who you consult throughout the documentary series. Tell us a little bit about him.
But yes, John Davis has been producing Motor Week on PBS for 45 years. And I was lucky enough to have interned at Motor Week. And then I got a job as a video editor there and worked there for some time. And then I moved into another TV show that's produced at the same station. So we stayed friends and stayed in touch. And when I started working on this documentary, I asked John if I could interview him as, you know, one of our historical experts. And I was also very lucky that Motor Week let me use footage from their archives of different AMC vehicles and Renault vehicles.
Being put through their paces a little bit. Yeah. No pun intended.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, my relationship with Motor Week, they're great friends, and they've been so good to us for letting us use footage for John to be interviewed. And I think that was one thing, you know, our documentary had, the raw material had over 50 interviews or around, you know, 50 interviews that we did. And I think about 35 of those made it into the final documentary. But we were very excited with the number of journalists and historians and former employees, you know, everything from factory workers to former CEOs to designers to engineers. It was really cool to be able to include all those stories of people who are both inside the industry and outside the industry watching it, who lived through this time period. That was pretty cool.
I want to ask you, Joe, why this topic is important and why someone should care about this. And we're speaking with Joe Ligo, the creator and executive producer of the new PBS documentary, The Last Independent Automaker. But before we get to that, I set you up by saying, you know, they loved George Burns in Altoona and they love you in Kenosha. You recently attended a big car show for people who collect American Motors cars and American Motors memorabilia. And I understand that you were something of a celebrity up there. Tell us about what that experience was like.
maybe, yeah. I mean, if there's such a thing as a D-list celebrity, maybe.
Okay.
So every 3 years, the Kenosha Historical Society puts on what they call the Kenosha Homecoming.
And we should say that most American Motors cars, I mean, I think they had, I mean, other than the Jeeps, which were and are made in Toledo, Ohio, most of the cars were made in Kenosha, in and around Kenosha, Wisconsin. So that's...
So Kenosha is home to where I would say, you know, the majority of these cars, not all of them, but the majority of these cars were built in several plants around Kenosha, Wisconsin and the Milwaukee area. And so they hold this big homecoming show. And sadly, the factories are no longer there, but the people in the cars all come out. You know, they get close to 1,000 cars when they do this, and they get, you know, in terms of spectators, they get tens of thousands of spectators. And yeah, it's a great celebration of just the history of American Motors, the cars they made, and the people and the workers of the city. And so, yeah, I got to go to that show. I actually drove my 1972 AMC Ambassador all the way from Pennsylvania to Wisconsin and back. And it was a fantastic show. It was such a great celebration of these cars and the men and women who built them. And yeah, it was really cool. I didn't make this project to become a celebrity, but it really means a lot when we had people come up to us and come up to me and say how much the series meant to them. Say, oh, my dad worked there, my neighbor worked there, you interviewed my friend. You know, it meant so, and it really meant a lot to them. And it meant a lot to me to hear what they thought, and that it meant so much that somebody cared enough to document the history of this industry and this city. And I think that that's something, you know, that our kind of region can appreciate: industrial history, whether it's steel or cars or anything else that we make. You know, the things we make are important. And so I think that's a big part of our history.
We're talking this morning with Joe Ligo. He's the producer of The Last Independent Automaker. It's a new documentary which debuted recently on PBS stations across the country. It's been running on Saturday afternoons on Channel 13 in Pittsburgh. You can find it, thelastindependent.com.
Lastindependentauto.com.
Lastindependentauto.com to find out more information about Joe Ligo. When we come back, I want to talk about why this story is important and why preserving this kind of industrial history is important. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about why PBS is important. You've spent most of your career working in and around public television and public media, what it means for those entities to kind of be threatened right now.
Sure.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striflers Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striflers has provided compassionate, professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striflers offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company, Design Monuments, Striflers also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at Striflers.com. Or call 412-678-6191.
Our guest this morning is Joe Ligo. He is a video producer. His roots are in western Pennsylvania, but his heart for the last couple of years has been in and around Kenosha, Wisconsin, and Detroit, Michigan. He is the producer and creator of the new documentary, The Last Independent Automaker, which is airing on PBS stations nationwide right now, including in Pittsburgh, on Channel 13 on Saturday afternoons. Check your local listings for times. And if you miss it on Channel 13, you can find it on YouTube. Joe, your channel is called Auto Moments on YouTube?
Yes, that's okay. Correct. Look for Auto Moments on YouTube or just search for The Last Independent Automaker and you'll find all six episodes are there. They're nice, bite-sized 28-minute episodes, so the perfect length to watch while you're eating lunch. That's what somebody said.
Perfect. So about 10 or 15 years ago, not to make this about me, I wrote a book about McKeesport's G.C. Murphy company. And the question I got at the time was, why should anybody care? Why does anybody care about a company that went out of business in 1989? And
right.
Why is this American Motors story important? As you pointed out, the company, you know, was taken over by Chrysler, went out of business in 1985. Why is preserving this important?
It's the same thing as the Murphy story. It's you know, it's the same reason why Rick Seebeck made a documentary called Things That Aren't Here Anymore. It's people like to remember. I think for the people who lived through it, they like to remember that it happened. And for the people who didn't live through it, it's valuable for them to learn about how we got here. And if you look at American Motors Corporation, you know, multiple times they had a huge in this company that was, you know, way smaller than Ford or GM. Had a huge impact on the way the car market developed and turned. I mean, I think two entire classes of automobile can be attributed to American Motors. One, the American-style compact car was because, you know, American Motors didn't build the first small car, and they didn't even build the first small American car, but they built the first successful small American car. And it was the success of the what was originally the Nash Rambler, then the American Motors Rambler, that convinced the big three, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, to build their own compacts. And without AMC proving that there was a profitable way to do that, I think that they would have just always thought that small cars were for weird Europeans and not for Americans. And I think AMC proved that there was a market for small cars in the U.S. And then in the second half of the company's history, when they bought the Jeep Corporation and acquired the Jeep brand, they proved that four-wheel drive vehicles didn't just have to be something you took to a hunting cabin or the job site or a farm, that, you know, regular suburban folks loved four-wheel drive vehicles, loved the extra security of four-wheel drive. Like we mentioned, driving in the snow, driving on hills. And just the other day, I saw a Jeep Cherokee, a 1990s Jeep Cherokee, was still delivering mail out where my parents live, you know, in the country around Mercer County. And it shows that, right, you know, they AMC hit something there with the Jeep Cherokee, that this was a new type of vehicle. And for better or for worse, the SUV craze we're all living in now is large part due to the success of AMC and their ownership of Jeep.
They were really viewed as utilitarian vehicles. They were viewed as farm vehicles, and I think even before AMC bought Jeep, AMC came over and they put fancy interiors in them and stereo tape decks, and suddenly this was the vehicle you drove to the country. You got dressed up and you drove to the golf course or the country club in.
Right, exactly. It was just the one guy we interviewed, Pat Foster, my co-producer, we interviewed him, and he said, you know, if you look at Jeep brochures in the 60s, everybody's at job sites, farms, construction sites.
They're wearing hard hats and flannel shirts.
And he said, and if you look at Jeep brochures in the 70s, they're at the beach, they're playing volleyball, you know, they got a beautiful girl with them, they're driving through the surf and the waves, and it's a totally, it's the same vehicles, the technologically, the vehicles are the same, but in terms of image, it's totally different. But to answer your question, sorry, I got a little off topic. Why this history matters is, you know, I think people need to learn where we came from and how we didn't just end up here by accident, you know? And so whether you're talking about the history of retail and the way our shopping habits changed, or the history of cars and how technology changed what we drove, you know, I think it's important for people to learn. And I think for the people who lived through it, it means a lot to them to see that somebody cared enough to save their story. And I think that's an honor for me and for my co-producers to be able to preserve that history is really cool, to be able to say that, you know, this will not be forgotten because we went out and interviewed these men and women who worked here. That's a really cool thing.
Joe Ligo is our guest. He's the executive producer and creator of The Last Independent Automaker, which is airing on PBS stations around the country. I was wondering if there was any bitterness, because I know even in my own research in doing research of industrial history and local history around Western Pennsylvania, sometimes you talk to someone who was laid off from a steel mill, who was laid off from G.C. Murphy or from Westinghouse or wherever, and there's still a little anger. There. I was wondering if there was any anger in places like Kenosha, Wisconsin, or Detroit, Michigan, where these plants were that have now closed, that this company is no more.
One thing that interested me and interested our crew as we worked on this was the variety of opinions people had about the Chrysler buyout in 1987 when Chrysler bought AMC. That, you know, for a lot of the white collar workers, about 70% of the white collar workers got to keep their jobs. And so for a lot of them, they said, you know, Chrysler's the reason I have a pension today. Chrysler's the reason I have health insurance. You know, they said I went from working at American Motors to working at Chrysler, and it was a great experience. But on the other side, a lot of when Chrysler shut down AMC's two big plants in 1989, a lot of people lost their jobs in Kenosha. And so for a lot of them, Chrysler is like, you know, a swear word almost. But at the same time, Chrysler did keep an engine plant open in Kenosha until 2010. And so there were still some workers who worked there all the way, who were fortunate enough to keep their jobs at the engine plant all the way up until 2010. And so for them, they said the same thing. It's like, well, Chrysler's the reason why I kept a job and could retire. So it's a complicated history, but there's definitely bitterness around why did things have to go the way they did? And, you know, this wasn't fair, that wasn't fair. And even more so than the bitterness, I think there is a sadness. I think people are sad that the company is gone, you know, that something that meant so much to them, they went into that building every day and worked in that building every day. And now that building is gone, it's tough for them. But one thing that amazes me is how resilient Kenosha is as a city in terms of its ability to reinvent itself. I mean, they're proud of their automotive heritage and they miss it, but they're not stuck in the past. It is a beautiful place, and the people there are great folks. And so it reminds me of maybe, I don't know if it's probably smaller than Pittsburgh, but it reminds me of similarly to Pittsburgh of how the capacity to kind of reinvent itself lends to a spirit of optimism there, you know, and I think that's a good thing.
When we come back, I want to ask you two things. One is, I think the last time we talked was probably during the pandemic. So I want to ask how the pandemic kind of complicated this for you. And then I want to ask about the climate in public television right now. I know our friends at Channel 13 and our friends at 90.5 and 91.3 are worried right now about the climate for public media. And I wanted to ask you about that, okay?
Absolutely.
We're talking with Joe Ligo. He's the producer of The Last Independent Automaker, a documentary which has been airing on PBS stations nationwide, including on Channel 13 here in Pittsburgh on Saturday afternoons. You can find out more information at thelastindependentauto.com, or you can find it on Facebook. Joe's YouTube channel also has the videos. That's at Auto Moments. From the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, and we'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability. That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the City of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
Are there lessons in your research in the documentary for places like McKeesport, Braddock, Duquesne, some of these post-industrial communities, as to how Kenosha was able to reinvent itself? What can people learn about this if they're listening to this in Newcastle or New Kensington?
We don't get too much into the aftermath in our documentary. We tend to, you know, the story ends around 1992, and we kind of allow it to like sit and not have a lot of modern analysis. But I mean, just on a personal level, from what I've seen, I think that, you know, Kenosha strikes a great balance. The people of Kenosha strike a great balance of appreciating their industrial heritage and loving it, but realizing that, you know, that's maybe not what the city's going to be like in the future. And so, but as far as any type of analysis or advice that I could give to a municipality, I'm probably not qualified. But I think that history is important. I think that there's a way to appreciate history without being bitter or longing for something that's gone in an unhealthy way. I think you need to strike a balance of saying, this is where we came from and this is where we're going. And again, I think it's fun. I think when people can connect to what was made and what was regional and what was local to them, it makes them proud to be a part of an area. And I think that is if you don't feel a pride about where you're from, I think history can help you build that pride. You know, that you can be proud to say that, you know, I'm from Pennsylvania, I'm from Pittsburgh, I'm from Wisconsin or whatever. I think history is a big part of that.
You've worked in public media most of your career. Channel 40, where you started out at, is not a public station, but in many ways they are an educational station in the Pittsburgh area. Right now, funding for public media is in jeopardy. The federal government has closed the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which helps support public TV and radio stations around the country. As you and I are talking, it's just been announced that the PBS and NPR stations that Penn State University owns, they are considering just simply closing them down up there in State College. I don't know if you had heard that. It sent shockwaves through a lot of people who are broadcasters in Pennsylvania, that Penn State would just close their TV station down. Why is public broadcasting so important in this country?
When I was in Kenosha at the Giant Car Show promoting this documentary, I had a lot of people come up to me and tell me how much they appreciated the series. And, you know, because the funding cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting were in the news and everybody's thinking about it, you know, a guy came up to me and shook my hand. He said, I don't really like PBS, but I like what you did. You know, I didn't have the heart to tell him that without PBS, we would have never been able to do it. Our documentary, actually, we had to raise all of our own funding. PBS did not pay us anything. We did not get a giant check of government money or anything like that. We had to raise all of our own funding, but we were able to do that because of the legitimacy and the structure that public broadcasting provided. So the fact that we knew they would run the series, the fact that they would not influence us or have editorial control, that they let us have the final cut of the series. The fact that we knew that there was an infrastructure there, that it would be broadcasted, shown to millions, then in turn allowed us to go and apply for grants and apply for corporate sponsorships. And they said, oh, well, this is a public television project. We can trust this. We know this is a trustworthy thing. And so it was a great public-private partnership. I mean, the fact that the public broadcasting system existed was, you know, that was a great thing that then allowed us to leverage grants and donations and sponsorships to get this program on the air. And, you know, despite what conspiracy theories people might have, we had final editorial control over the program. Nobody said, oh, you need to be these politics or this politics, or you need to say this or that. I mean, it was our team. So if anybody doesn't like something they hear, blame it on me. Don't blame it on the folks at public television. So our partnership was distributed through Maryland Public Television, which then was the presenting station that made it available to all the other stations in the country. But yeah, without PBS, we would have never been able to tell this story. No commercial network was going to say, oh, yeah, give us the story of AMC. That's, you know.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, I don't mean to cast aspersions on any of the commercial networks, but it's just hard to imagine ABC, NBC, CBS, Comedy Central, whoever saying, you know what we need is a 6-hour or 3-hour documentary on the American Motors Corporation. Like, I don't see that happening. And you pointed out to me off the air that in Pittsburgh, your show has been airing in a block with shows like about woodworking, about this old house, these do-it-yourself type handyman shows, which, again, commercial TV could do, but they're not doing. You know, these shows are not even on cable. They're only public television has been investing money in these kinds, or even giving an outlet. Like you said, you had to raise your own money, but just giving you the outlet, giving you the structure that you were able to then do that.
Right. So public television gave us a platform, and you're right. There was a quote somewhere on the wall, you know, when I used to work full time at Maryland Public Television, there's a quote somebody put up on a bulletin board that was, you know, probably from the 70s, where it said, you know, in our vast media landscape, there has to be room for at least a small voice that is not motivated by commercial interest, you know, and I love all kinds of television, all kinds of movies, you know, but I do think that there is a space where we have to make a space for things that money is not the bottom line, right? You know, there was the economic justification for doing a documentary on American Motors is small. You know, we're not going to sell a lot. We're not going to make a ton of money on advertising or anything like that. But when you talk to the people who watched the series and it meant a lot to them, you realize that it was worth the effort, that it's worth doing things when money is not the bottom line. Because you hear these people say, thank you so much for interviewing my uncle. Thank you so much for telling these stories. Thank you so much for talking about these cars. Thank you so much for the research you did. And you realize that, you know, just because this maybe would have, you know, if I, you know, I didn't even try to sell this to Netflix or Hulu or, you know, Amazon or whatever, but it proves that it meant something to people, even if it wasn't going to be something that made me rich. And so I'm proud that I was able to make it. And I think that's important. I think, you know, who would ever say that all the documentaries Rick Seebeck has done on Pittsburgh are a bad thing, right? I mean, I've watched through those, you know, 30 years of filmmaking in Pittsburgh, all the people he's interviewed, all the places he's visited. And, you know, he couldn't have done it without public television, without public broadcasting. And what a great way to preserve the history of a region and the people who worked and lived and hung out there than through his type of filmmaking. And so I think that's why we need public broadcasting, is because, you know, we need to have at least some media out there that is about more than just making money.
If they like that kind of stuff, what would you suggest they maybe could do?
Well, of course, I mean, you know, the most obvious thing is to support your local PBS station, whether that's through donations or membership or whatever. And so I think that's a big thing you can do, is, you know, help these stations stay on the air by supporting them financially. But another thing is also, if you like their stuff, you know, download the free PBS app, watch the shows on the app, on your phone, on your smart TV, that kind of thing. Because, you know, that data and those numbers help stations prove that, you know, when you have an audience, that proves that they're worth keeping around. And so, you know, I think downloading the app, becoming a member, becoming a donor, those things can all be great. And, you know, even there are sponsors, you know, PBS is non-commercial, but they do occasionally have commercial sponsors or partners. I think even expressing to those partners that you appreciate that they support public television. You know, if you see, like, for instance, you know, our program was sponsored in part by Visit Detroit, which is a tourist promotional organization in Detroit. You know, tell them, like, hey, I learned about you on The Last Independent Automaker. Thanks for supporting this storytelling.
So what's next for you, Joe? I mean, I'm probably taking a deep breath, but then what are you jumping into next?
I have a future project in the works. I can't say too much because we're still negotiating some things, but it's another automotive history project. It's going to be a shorter one, but we're trying to narrow in the focus of a crazy car that was a combination of international intrigue and, you know, engineering and development, trying to build a world beating sports car. And then it all fell apart.
I wonder which one that is. Wink, wink. Okay, we're looking forward to that. Find Joe Ligo on social media or check out his YouTube channel at Auto Moments. And certainly, if the last independent automaker is coming to your town, it's been running on Channel 13 in Pittsburgh. It's 6 parts. And again, if you're interested in mid-century history, American business history, and certainly interested in cars, you're probably going to want to check it out. Joe, thank you so much for coming back onto the show.
Absolutely, Jay. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening this week to Two Rivers 30 Minutes. So long for now.
You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tube City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at tubecityonline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at tubecitytiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online. We'll